and orange circles are subcommittee calls, like the call today. So the basic flow, as you see on screen, you can see the first, the left column first. So that's for the brief process from the contribution to the model phrase. So this circle here shows the weekly based thread level discussion, which is the weekly discussion on the, for the call and among the sub teams. So the basic process is any participants who are interested to propose any contribution, he can provide his or her contribution onto the input wiki page. And then he or she can notice the call organizer or add it on the wiki page of, we also have a wiki page for each call. And you can edit that call to put something to the agenda. Then we know we will discuss it during that week. So here is you provide input and add it to the agenda. Then in the subgroup call, we will discuss it. Then it may have two results. First is agreed. Then we make some rough consensus and we'll try to approve them in the subcommittee calls. If we do not reach any consensus, we will put that result in a discussion page and track all the status of those discussion, and we'll try to resolve that in the following calls. So if the subcommittee agrees our proposal, then those proposals will be put into the clean page, which shows the agreement of the subcommittee. Okay, so also if something is not agreed at first, then it's in the discussion page. And later it resolves, and then we will go through the subcommittee call and put them into the clean page. And then the discussion, the old discussion page will be moved to the backlog for just logging issues. So that's a rough process of our weekly discussion. And we will do that, I guess, before the model freeze. And after the model freeze, we will enter the preparation for the publication. And so, and then we will close any input, any discussion on the input of our release 3 modeling. And we'll try to begin the review of the whole model and begin to prepare for the documentation for publication. In release 2, I guess we only have the Red Doc, which is an official Linux Foundation, I think ONAP documentation site that shows our specifications. And it comes from the wiki page, and it's expected to be the final result. I mean, the release 2, not release 3. But yeah, this is the current workflow. So after that, we think the documentation is nearly finished, or it's ready to be approved or reviewed, and we can call for review, call for improvement for the in the subcommittee calls, and finally got them publicated. So that's the rough workflow of our current process. And the next slide we want to show is we got some feedback that these two wiki page, those tables are not completed or were not considered to fully function for model building. So we've we'll think about those feedback and propose to enhance those table formats to better serve this purpose. We currently identify two changes needed. First one is we will try to distinguish classes versus data types. And those discussion, I think I will talk about later for the resource information model. And the other one, I guess, is a bigger change is to reflect the relationship between different classes in our wiki tables. So the proposal is to add a new table of relationships. And here I have an example, which shows the relationship between current class and those related classes and the type of relationship, name of it, and also the description and cardinality of those relationships. So with that, I think the wiki table will have a complete information and will not lose anything here. And the next thing is the community has proposed to use Papyrus as a tool for helping us building the model and in the discussion. And we roughly the conclusion is we haven't reached a consensus on those parts. There are several options or possibilities that we can leverage the Papyrus during this whole process. And here we got some disagreement. The left line is, the left column is the wiki process as I described in the first slide. It's basically the same flow here. And the right side is the Papyrus. And we try to introduce Papyrus in the discussion phase, I mean the weekly discussion, to help our to help us understand the status of the discussion. But we got several options here. Someone proposed to enhance the stereotypes of the Papyrus to track all the status of the discussion, like input discussion and also claim, which means you will got everything in the discussion trapped in the Papyrus model also. And we'll try to show things on both sides. This is one option, the option three here. The other one is option two, which is we will only show things in Papyrus after those models reach consensus or when those models are in the clean page. After that, we will try to move those things into the Papyrus. So the Papyrus will only show the, the Papyrus on the GitHub or the Garrett will only show the clean version, the written part. This not prevents you from creating any UML diagrams during discussion, but do not track anything in the GitHub or Garrett. This is option two. And the last option one is we create Papyrus only after the model freeze, which means we nearly finish all the modeling building for a certain release, then we move them all into the Papyrus and prepare for the final publication. I think that's
Rob. Why is option one preferred? Can you talk about that?
I think it's preferred depending on who the person is who's talking, Alex.
Yes. As I said, this is haven't been.
So does this, I mean, this slide that just said it, I understand the level set here. when something says preferred and not recommended, this is, I presume, the opinion of the person who put the slides together or the assumption of a team that put this together?
Those words only shows the opinions of providers of the slides, which means from my side and CMCC.
Yeah, we got to be careful with how we put wording in here.
I agree.
This yeah. deck is showing a Linux Foundation ONAP, which appears to be group consensus.
Okay, as I said, this is still in discussion, so you can. Our preference is the option one.
No, but you shouldn't indicate that on this slide. You should just simply state the three options on the discussion slide and let this group reach consensus over which option is appropriate, possibly even through a doodle poll.
Yes. Now, one question, I very much agree with that, because obviously several of us were very involved in this, but we don't support the preferred one here. But one question I would ask, let's assume for a moment we go with option one. So if we go with option one, basically all the work is done on the wiki page. Why do anything in Papyrus at all? If it's only after the fact, why don't we just do it in wiki? I don't see any value there.
Because ONAP is a model-driven architecture.
It's not being used. I know. Used for anything.
I agree.
So it sounds like there's an option four, which is to keep the current process.
Well, it means not using a tool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's the tool approach where I'd actually draw a separate line from that bottom papyrus to the RST doc, because I think the documentation should be generated from the tool, not from a wiki page.
I agree. Well, the part of the maybe it's not quite. I'm not sure if it's quite option two or quite option three, but I think a valid point about doing input in the wiki is not everyone perhaps is wants to take the time to use the tool, to come up to speed with it, whatever. So to be able to throw an idea on the wiki and so it could be picked up as part of a, call it sub-team discussion, I think that makes a lot of sense. How I would propose changing this is, As is indicated here, during discussion, things can be reflected in Papyrus. If you have a model editor, meaning, and of course, Jesse put together a very nice presentation on a proposal several weeks ago, just hasn't been presented here. But if the model editor for that particular submodel is on the call, they can quite quickly, once it enters the discussion page, can put it in Papyrus. A result of that is you'll have diagrams, which is not so easy to do within the wiki. You can have diagrams, you will have tables that are automatic output. Those can then be shared back on the wiki, either as pictures or in the case of tables, I tried this yesterday, you can go into the Word output of Papyrus, do a quick copy, go back to the wiki and do paste, and you get a very nice table. The end result, well, one of the challenges with option one is assuming we put it in Papyrus at all, that then suggests that you have to examine and accept twice. One, for what's in the wiki, and two, what's in Papyrus to make sure it reflects what's in the wiki. If instead we do work in Papyrus in conjunction with discussion, not even saying that everything has to be done in Papyrus, but it's at least updated, reflected, shared back in Papyrus, then hopefully by the time you're reaching some level of consensus, Papyrus matches or is what's in the wiki. Mm. Once it's accepted in Papyrus, and you publish it out of Papyrus.
What's the I'm still don't get the preference stated. So obviously a few people believe that option one is the way forward, but what's the motivation or why, what's the rationale for saying that? Andrew, can you speak to that? I'm trying to understand both sides here. Why would we only do something after the fact?
Option one, I guess the reason first is we have agreed to some extent that we want to have papyrus as part of the publication phase. So people want to see papyrus models, UML diagrams, as part of the publication. So we need to do that in the publication phase. The other part of the reason is we want to use the wiki as the source or the basis for providing the final model of our publication phase, and also use wiki as a basis for the discussion, because we think it's more far more easier for people to join, provide their comments and updates, and also bring their contributions more easier for the wiki way than the papyrus way. So we still want to stick to the wiki to as the basis for the discussion.
That's the misconception, though. That's the problem, right? You're lowering the bar to common denominator being everybody must use the wiki, instead of what Kevin stated eloquently was that the wiki is an option for people to contribute and make contributions. And therefore, that first line should be swapped, right? Wiki is the supporting tool for people that don't want to run the models or install the modeling tools.
Yes, I agree. This is the core disagreement. We believe the wiki is more easier tool too for people to use.
Is it because you don't believe that some members of the community will not know how to use the tool or don't know UML, or do you think it'll take too long? Or I mean, it seems like most communities use UML and use Papyrus fairly effectively to document their models and to work on their models. But if there's a problem with that, then we should know. But is it, I can understand if some people who are involved in modeling don't know UML or don't know how to use the tools, but there's a huge benefit to using them, right?
I mean, think so. And part of the risk, Alex, is if they don't know the tool and they don't know UML, and I'll focus on the last one. If they don't know UML, then putting together a proper model, we're in trouble already.
But I think that we should moderate and use both, but in a proper way. I mean, I see a value in the comment of Xu saying, when you want someone to provide a right comment can be written easily in the wiki. In reality, I think that we should agree on this. The point is that I agree also that Papyrus should be a tool that we use for discussion and for clean. What I was thinking is that when you have a Papyrus version with GenDoc, you can automatically create the table and publish the table, and then you can discuss based on the table that are provided by Papyrus. So I think that we should use both, but the important thing is that the Papyrus is used in even during the discussion and the clean version.
Well, we need to be careful, right? Because, I kind of agree with you. I think the wiki group discussion capabilities are pretty good, and we shouldn't jettison that option. I mean, we want to have discussions, and so to me, it's not one or the other, it's both. I agree with you on that. But we also need to be very, let's be fair. A lot of people, like me, sometimes do these phone calls on their cell phone, and some of the information, just wouldn't be viable to even display on a phone. So just keep that in mind. When you're on the road, sometimes you have very little option but to use the mobile tools. So just keep that in mind, just because a lot of us do travel. But I do agree that in general, maybe you know, adding the option that says we use both Papyrus and the wiki as we see necessary or as we see fit, that would be great. I just don't want to be personally. If I want to add a Papyrus diagram or use it to communicate an idea, I don't want to be stopped from doing that by some rule that says I can't. I only have to use the Jiffy diagrams or the wiki written text.
Yeah, okay, this is another way to read. For me, the minimum set is to say we want to have a Papyrus so when we are discussing, for me is have a Papyrus to where we anyhow we can discuss, no? So I mean, you can have part of a discussion in the wiki, and you can even provide an input only by Papyrus. But when we reach consensus, before we want to reach the consensus, for me, we should have a Papyrus.
Yeah, I think part of what you're saying, Michaela, and I believe I agree with you, is the line between discussion and Papyrus, it's kind of red in one direction. I would suggest we change that to both directions. So what we're saying that there's a wiki discussion, it's going to Papyrus. There's also Papyrus material that's going back into the wiki discussion. Maybe it's a copy and paste diagram. Maybe it's a copy and paste table. And at some point we can say whatever's on the wiki is also reflected in Papyrus. And then as you just said, when we think we're reaching consensus, we reach that consensus based on an output of the Papyrus model. Then whenever it goes to the subcommittee, where we're now getting it, you know, approval, that approval is based on the Papyrus model, and the publish is done via the publish model. That way you're only having to examine and approve one, not first in the wiki, and then if we have energy, we'll also make sure Papyrus reflects it. It basically is in Papyrus, and you're done. You do it once.
And Kevin, that seems like a good compromise, but I'll state a personal fear. So I've yet to be able to run Papyrus on my laptop.
All right. So I think can anybody hear me? I think the proposal here, we need considering the diversity of the participation from the community. So, for example, I think some people spend lots of time in release 2 trying to learn Papyrus. It seems like it's not very in good shape. So, to learn the Papyrus still has a kind of, is a, not a very low bar. It still is for professionals, they are maybe easy, but for, I think I heard from Ali and also from other people, they are have strong concern to not allow the average, I mean, contributors, excuse me, for example, some of the data modeling people are also hesitated to learn new tools. And also there are differences between the ONAP, GitHub, we are using the license claim for files.
There's no license, right? It's open source.
Yeah, it's a license, but it's different from other standards. They are using GitHub to post the modern specifications. I'm handling this issue lots of my time to try to resolve the license claim for YouTube files on the GitHub in the get rate of the ONAP. That's also another challenge. But so my recommendation is to create a wiki page for this discussion in 1 week. And also, Lini is not here. We heard a different opinion here. And I think the Yangshu can update the slides by remove the preferred or not recommended options here, and put posts on a wiki page, then people can discuss over there, and then we come back maybe next week call. Oh, would that be okay for everybody?
Yeah, that would be great. I'd like to know one thing, just for my own kind of peace of mind. Those folks who've been working behind the scenes to use the tool to kind of set this up and try the tool out, do we feel confident that we would be able to provide enough support to get things to run?
Well, a comment I would make, because it's probably Jesse and I that have been most active in the tool. One comment I would make is, you know, modeling tools, whether it's Sparks or Papyrus or whatever, there is some effort to come up to speed. I frankly have not used Papyrus till about 2 weeks ago. And in less than 2 weeks, I would say I'm up to speed. Mm-hmm. I can model in Papyrus. I can publish via GenDoc, and I can also put things through GitHub. So it's an effort, but it's far from insurmountable. Okay. A second comment I would make is keep in mind that in order for this to work, first of all, if you have a lot of discussion groups and they're all making changes to, or some of them are making changes to the same class, then later you have to figure out, well, this sub-team likes it this way and this definition and another sub-team that way. So the idea of having single ownership for changing something is pretty important. Nigel shared that in some work, they ran into this problem and it was a nightmare to sort it out. So I think it will be important to, you know, kind of single ownership for making updates. So if we do kind of that blend I was suggesting, a given sub-team, there would presumably be a single model editor. And model editor does not mean that they're ones coming up with the ideas necessarily, but they capture the results of the discussion, whether it's in Wiki or on the back of pieces of paper or whatever. And then hopefully then they share back what was discussed.
Okay.
On the next call. So that way, not everybody has to use Papyrus. If they want to, they can.
So the bidirectional flows, is that a new option, option four?
The bidirectional flow was something I suggested fairly early on when I understood and appreciated the point that not everybody can or should use Wiki. Should be required to use Papyrus.
Yeah, and that's the key thing that people are missing, right? I think there's an assumption there that everybody needs to be the editor, model editor, and that's what's blocking this. And we don't. As Kevin said, we need one model editor for each subdomain or subgroup.
Okay.
And back on slide two, what are the... on slide two, what are the current subgroups, the yellow?
So this is the weekly call for the information resource information model and also the service information model.
Okay, so we have two right now.
So in
terms of model editors, Jesse can do the resource editing, and maybe Kevin can do the service editing.
Something like that. Presently, I've been working on the resource or the VNF, and Jesse's been doing service. But you're right. It's something perhaps that simple.
Well, Kevin just talked about the one.
So let me chime in here. So we have released, it looks like our release 2 is kind of failure, and people are arguing here. But so personally, I'm not convinced. It seems like we have successfully published our release 2 specifications based on our process. And so let's discuss in the wiki page. We have other topics today to discuss. So we can come back with later.
So I don't think anybody's saying that what was done is a failure. I
agree. So that's what I mean. Okay. So let's move back. So I think the urgent topic is just one thing. So Victor, do you have any issue for the release 2 data modeling? Because I saw the Catherine is asking here. Victor, are you here?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we. I think the I put the one patch into the SDC this afternoon, and because we have so many dtaps update from that compare from ONAP R1, so Catherine is asking for does we already done the data modeling for R2 submission for the SDC. Now, because I'm verifying the tab on the STC latest Docker, so it maybe takes me some time, but if someone can help me, I will appreciate to help me do this together, I think. I think if all this done by me, I think I can done by end of this week, maybe, because it takes some time. Because I need update large of data types and node types, because it have so many relationship, and you do it.
Okay. Thank you. That is the problem for us, right? So we have too many standard people other than contributors for the data modeling. Is anybody online here can help the Victor about this data modeling?
Can you help me to understand what is the request exactly?
Because Catherine, if you look at the SDC code, you can see that SDC code that place the data model that describes the dtap and such as the node tab and the artifacts tab, relation tab, that SDC uses tab to generate the VM descriptor and SDC descriptor. And if we want to use SDC to design a VM descriptor and NS descriptor or service descriptor that use R2 modeling, we need to submit these changes for data modeling into SDC and verify it.
Okay. There's also so we can probably, let me see what I can do in terms of help. We do have some developers who are working in the SDC space. So potentially maybe they can help you, Victor.
Okay.
The other thing we need to do is to reflect the changes. There were two problems with the model in general, right? One was the inability to create a VM with local disks. That's something we already fixed on the Etsy side, and now we just need to fix to fix this in the model. And then there was also, we need to enhance the specification for the HPAK value pairs. Those would be additional things in addition to what you're doing. But for the task at hand, let me see if I can find somebody from Intel.
Yes, maybe you can verify both the HP and the VCP use case. I will focus on the water use case related types.
Maybe. Okay, let me see what I can do. I think we have some folks in China actually who are working on this, so that would be convenient.
Okay, if you can send me the contact, I will contact your Chinese colleague to.
Okay,
do
let me see what I can do.
So okay, Victor, can you help to send an email to the Alex and Michaela about the help you need?
Sure.
And they can follow up. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Victor, I checked.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Okay, many thanks to the intern, Alex, thank you. Okay, so let's move on. So next is the Antonia, you're here. So can you, because there are many feedback about the release 3 data modeling, can you?
Yeah, I am here, and I will be really glad to summarize the exchange of opinions we've had the last week about this idea of having more than one model along the orchestrational path. Just let me share the presentation. Okay. You see it, right? So here is a page for those who missed the discussion, and here is a discussion. I try to be as responsive as possible, and bottom line, if I instead of reading through this pretty long threads of discussions, maybe we can just try to summarize in a few statements each topics as I see them. So here is how I see the general directions, general lines of discussion. I kind of subdivided it here, tactical and strategic. Please don't be offended if you suddenly find some of your questions in tactical and not in strategic. It's not about priority, just kind of subdivision. So maybe we'll start from easy one. The first thing people were asking after they were exposed to the very first slide of that presentation. So wait, what's exactly the format of the new model? How many of them will we have? Is it Tosca? Is it YAML? Is it JSON? How many Toscas? So the answer is quick. We will have more than one data model, many for onboarding, one internal inside for the purpose of orchestration and operation. The internal one will be Tosca, obviously. The ingested ones can be everything, actually. It can be Tosca, it will be Tosca. It will be a bit different Tosca. Syntactically, it will be Tosca, but semantically, what we have currently with R2 data model and the direction it takes right now, it's not exactly Tosca. YAML, it can be as well. Heat, we can preserve this flow too. JSON, whatever, guys, okay? The only requirement, I think, that should be valid is that we have to have some very solid informational model as a basis for all our onboarded models. Okay, that should be a requirement. Another question was about modeling the service. The presentation focused mainly on the VNF part of modeling, and there was a question whether we are going to translate service models too. And the answer is depends. As far as I know, currently we do not onboard service models. We only onboard VNF models. And as long as we do only VNF onboarding, we will need translation only for the VNF models. But once we decide to allow onboarding of service models too, then we will obviously need to provide translation for this part of model as well. And then, okay, we get to more complicated questions. Ting, I think, was alarmed with possible complexities of translation. He brought to my attention that translation of some data types, for example, can be very challenging. And I agree, it can be challenging if you go really wild, okay, if you go for really drastic translations of data type, like you take three complex data type on the source side and translate them, you know, into five totally different complex data type on the destination side. I think we will not go for this kind of complexity. I think that we are our situation is pretty good, meaning once we have a well-established informational model which defines groups of properties, group them in some sensible way, we can just follow this grouping and the translation will not have to, to do some really drastic conversions. In most cases, I really believe the translation will be as simple as just import the source data type, use, copy the values of properties of this data type, and that's it. Again, everything I say right now is only about data types, okay? Because it's the smallest unit of modeling in Tosca. It's not that easy with node types and capability types. I think the translation between splitting node types on the on source side into node types and capability types and some other types like policy types on the destination types on the destination side is something that we really have to do. I prepared some slides to publish, but I see that we currently kind of short on time, so I just put it to the very end of this talk. If I don't manage to publish these slides right now, then I will just put them on Wiki and we will communicate about these slides later offline. The idea of back and forth translation just came up in the discussion. We have actually two orchestrators right now. Okay, the orchestrator that came from Ecomp and the orchestrator that came from Huawei or whoever contributed to that product. And it was a really valid concern, I think. So if we go for one internal model that one of these orchestrators will not understand, then what we are going to do? And my answer to this question was, let's start with like encapsulation of something that's absolutely necessary for the current implementation of orchestrators as artifacts within our models. And then we will slowly, evolutionally refactor the orchestrator that to make them compliant to single data model. Again, it's just my proposal, of course, and it's also subject to discussion. A very important question was testing and verification. How do we test the onboarded models and how do we verify the onboarded models? I think that workflow wise, we should have the step. We already have it in SDC after onboarding. We have some logic in place to validate the models after they've been onboarded. This logic should also run for the new models. Likewise, I think that we have it. It's better to have this validation logic at the section of our pipeline where we have only one model, just to reduce the overhead of writing this kind of validation. Another question that actually has to do with this testing and verification thing, how do we ensure that the information provided by the vendors, the important information from their point of view, will be totally preserved, that nothing will be disformed or lost? It's a great question, actually. And my answer, well, I don't know. The way I see it, it can be, for example, just first of all, the fact that we publish everything, it's already first step to this kind of insurance, okay? When every transformation is being reviewed by 100 eyes, it's just it really lowers down the probability of a mistake. And we can also have some process in place, like every time we do something in data model, we have really must required to provide a mapping to the informational model, and maybe we will also have to think of kind of automation of this process. Maybe we can make it part of our onboarding, or maybe just kind of, I don't know, build process. And the last question was why to translate after all those slides I was presenting, after all discussions we have, this question still stands. The people really wonder, and this question actually comes back many, many times. So this question actually sounds like this. Okay, so we have another profile of Tosca, a top of simple profile of Tosca we have at the very basis. We kind of extended it. And the orchestrator has to support this profile. So what's the problem with it? The interesting thing about it is that this has to support, has to recognize. It's a nice thing to say, but we have to understand the cost, the prices we will pay for such a support. Okay, and this price will change drastically depending on which kind of Tosca we will choose for our internal purposes. Okay, the R2 data model, as it is defined right now, this will support of this thing will demand a tremendous effort of writing of customization, writing custom code along with a model that's not exactly model-driven design. And once we customize that deeply our orchestrator to support this model, we become kind of locked in this one orchestrator solution. We suddenly lose this ability to replace orchestrator for something else, which is Tosca compliant, understands Tosca, but it's not customized enough to understand this new level of Tosca. And this level of Tosca is pretty fat, and the level of customization we have to do is significant. So that's it. I see that we have like 2 minutes left. What do you think? We can resort to few questions and answers, or maybe I'll just jump to the slides I prepared just to explain the idea behind such translation.
You have a slide? Okay.
Yeah, it's maybe let's jump the slides. I tried to summarize or to generalize the my ideas of mapping between informational model onto the Tosca-based data model, and it's kind of answer to the question why the current R2 data model we're talking about is not good enough to be internal properties, to be internal model to drive our orchestration. So it's very, very initial draft, and maybe this presentation will just grow up into adding more and more patterns of how we implement the ideas of informational models to our Tosca-based data model. So here I just addressed one problem of such a mapping, most painful maybe, a translation of properties. So within the informational model, we have like informational element, and within this informational element, we have properties. It's kind of simple picture of the world. In Tosca, we suddenly have this explosive number of different lines of typing, and we have no type, we have capability, and so on and so on, and in each of them have their properties. So once we have an informational element with a property on one side, how do we take it to the Tosca? It's an interesting question, and the answer the R2 data model took, you know, the direction the R2 model took to answer this question is pretty straightforward. Okay, just map informational element to node property, always, almost always. Okay, currently I can see some shift towards capability types. It is not enough yet, and the policy is totally not in use. And the way I think we have to map the informational model to true Tosca model is by answering the questions. For example, once we have we have this property and we look at it and we have to answer ask ourselves these three questions. Okay, what's the purpose of this property? Who on within our ecosystem consumes this property? For example, if this property, the purpose of this property is to define the internal logic of a node, just the configuration for its behavior, something that the node just sucks in on its initialization or creation and then behaves by these properties, then obviously this property should move to the node type. It should be part of node types. But if this property is part of matchmaking semantics, then putting it on node types immediately triggers custom logic thing, okay? And the while Tosca provides exactly this capability type, line of capability typing, exactly for these purposes. So this kind of properties, the properties that drive matching between two and more nodes, they should be modeled as properties of capability types. And finally, we have properties that drive orchestration. They tell us on which distance, affinity or anti-affinity, scaling, things like this. And the way I see it, and I think that the way Tosca sees it, Tosca spec sees it, is to put it on policies. There are also other creatures in Tosca specs like group properties and artifact properties. Frankly, I don't know what to do with these, okay? Artifacts properties, exactly, group properties. Well, maybe we will have some of them, but it's not critical. So that's it so far. I did my best to tell it quickly.
Are we still debating the need to have the same model on both sides on onboarding and for the actual design and runtime? Are we past that and we're just talking about translation?
We are talking about translation, but at the same time, we still need to advocate this idea of having multiple. You know, why not?
I think we need to do this in parts. We need to tease this apart. I think there are a lot of nervousness about splitting the model into onboarding and the runtime. And to me, that's really the crux of the situation. Once you split the two models apart, how you do the internal representation of the onboarding models, that's less important, maybe, right? But it's
important for the other components in the ONAP system. So it's a separation of concerns from what we're asking vendors to provide from an onboarding perspective versus what ONAP needs to run internally.
But it seems like dividing and conquering this problem is more appropriate, right? Because we can at least address the angst from the VNF vendor community and make sure everybody's happy there. Then there's the discussion around how to properly model things in Tosca, but that would be, you know, again, only visible to components that need to partake in the definition of the internal models or in consumption of those models, right? That's a much smaller set of things.
Right, and that goes back to Anatoly's proposal about having, you know, multiple options for onboarding, but you know, they need to be bridged into the internal representation.
Yeah, so I'm confused, right? I think we need to address that first part first.
They need to be addressed in parallel as well, because we need to build things inside. I think that's Anatoly. That's your primary concern, right? Is what is SDC producing and sharing?
Just let me jump to this slide, to the very first slide of that presentation. Maybe it will
Anatoly, would it be possible we take one of the endpoints for such as SO, and we look at SO to see what part on the API it needs to consume the VNF descriptor, right? So we list all the API operations for the SOs, and then we try to see certain operations the SO needs certain information from the VNF descriptor. And then once we have that mapping, we can see how to improve at the beginning of modeling. Because the last thing we want to do is translation multiple times. I would rather to see what the SO API is expecting from the VNF descriptor.
Well, in simplest form, the SO API, in its really primitive form, will be as simple as just a deploy VNF, right? And inside the SO will need to decompose this VNF into the resources, understand the connections between them, start looking for some homing solutions where to put them. All these kind of things, okay? It's just kind of, even if it is a black box, okay, we still have to make this logic as generic as possible, totally driven by the model and less by some, hidden knowledge of, okay, let's for this
property. Yeah. My sense is that it's really not about translation, right? To me, it's about the fact that you always adjust your runtime representation or encoding of the model in line with your architecture. You know, you could, you know, for all we care, ONAP will be forced to use, you know, a very lightweight, decentralized internal representation composed of text documents and hyperlinks. I'm just making stuff up. But who cares, right? Because as long as we can translate the incoming definitions that need to be portable and industry standards based into something internal that makes sense for optimized performance for ONAP or, you know, whatever the requirements are from the architectural perspective, then I guess it really, yes, there's impact on the internal components, but, you know, it's agreed upon in general, right? That separation, I think, is what's important to get past.
Right, right.
After that, you know, everything kind of falls in place, right? Because it's not, we're not the first ones to address this. I said this before. Plenty of projects have done this before us. In fact, there's one right now called OSM that, you know, does this, right? So
I have a comment. Then, so the point is, for me, for instance, the policy, who will use the policy, for instance, and who will use the VNF descriptor and in this architecture, because I think that we can have other components that will use the VNF descriptor that is provided by the vendor. And instead, there can be different components, different part of the workflow that benefit of the policy. So if we are changing the VNF vendor descriptor to optimize it, to introduce the policy, I'm not sure that then the component that want you to read the VNF vendor descriptor will read exactly the same thing, will use exactly the same thing. If it doesn't work, who is fix the problem?
But the problem, Mikhail, I see your point. At the same time, I would say that how we use Tosca inside the NFV world is very different from how one could use Tosca should use Tosca in general. And that's also a fundamental problem, right? We know that, you know, if we had to start all over again, we probably would do things differently in terms of Tosca definitions. But somehow we still need to, what are we going to do about descriptors that might be in Yang or might be in other formats that have yet to come? Are we saying they're never going to be supported? Somehow we need to get past the translation fear, because there will always be VNF descriptors in alternative formats. We can't hold the world still. Tomorrow there will be another standard and everyone will rally around it for some reason. And what are we going to do? Say, no, we can't do it?
So the answer, how do we pass this fear of translation? I have two answers, okay? First way to pass beyond this fear is to to see the benefits we gain with such a translation. After we pay this cost of translation, for example, every vendor gets kind of independence of the orchestration solution, okay? ONAP's not the only orchestration solution around, okay? And if, for example, a vendor wrote its VNFD once, then it can deploy it on not only on ONAP, but on other orchestrational solutions, each with its own translation, that then it obviously a huge benefit for a vendor, for example.
The issue is not that. The issue is that somehow we believe that there's a one-to-one correlation, strong correlation between how that VNFD model looks and what needs to happen inside some orchestration layer, which, you know, you could argue that the different orchestration layers, if there's ever a choice, and I hope there is, may do things very differently internally, but they may all use, you know, the VNF descriptor as an input, right? You know, case in point is the HP version of the orchestration software. They use VNF descriptors as input, but, you know, what they do internally, I'm sure, is never going to look the same way as ONAP. Well, maybe not never, but it certainly doesn't look like it today. Yet nobody's worried about their translation.
Well, so we just take this translation and put it kind of earlier on our pipelines. That's all. Everyone does this translation, okay? But we decide to have it here and not there, and that's the only difference.
Hi, Anatoly. Just one comment. I think. I agree that, you know, it's better we have have a unified module, you know, inside ONAP. But what I recommend is that instead of develop a totally new module, why not, you know, you provide, you know, your comment and a suggestion on the ONAP R2 plus module that we just finish it, because my understanding that when we're working on the ONAP R2 module, we not just wanted to use that for onboarding. We also believe that it can be used inside the ONAP. And so, at least we can minimize the translating job, right? If the internal module somehow at least some part, right, align with the ONAP R2 module, then the translating job will be quite easier.
Yeah, that's the ideal world, okay, that we would like to have, and we were trying to have this world in R2, and let's put this on the table. We were not very very much successful on this way. We are too much coupled on this. The orchestrational guys hold back the VNF vendors, okay, because they propose some strange things that VNF vendors see as a dangerous deviation from ETSI conventions, for example. Okay, on the other hand, the VNF vendors with even Sol, for example, the most updated version of it, it is not good enough for the orchestration. Orchestration cannot get started on right leg without getting it right. So we are too coupled, and breaking this couple looks, you know, really beneficial for both vendors and orchestrational participants. I think that's the answer to this question. Why we don't have one model? Because we tried, and it did not go really well.
But can you at least provide your comment on the ONAP R2, you know, the clean page or the discussion page? At least we understand, you know, your comment you just you said. Because right now I still don't know why the ONAP R2, as you said, is not model driven, and you said it's not easy for the attrition. We are working on that also in SNFA, and it's also the module that used for the NF application, and they have the standard API modeling and a lot of specification to guarantee, you know, the spec works. So if you can provide your comments, so, you know, we can understand what the issue, at least, you know, it's better, you know, we can improve, you know, our standard.
Of course. Yeah, no problem. I will do. But anyway, so far, guys, we are pretty much past the timeline. And the problem is too heavy to get it resolved in 2 minutes.
Yeah,
so maybe just keep this proposal in mind and think what we can do about it. Keep thinking about it.
Right. So please do that. And also, I think one concern I heard mostly is how the VFC to handle this internal model. Probably you can also give some suggestion if you update the wiki page.
Excuse me, Yui?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's one project and one module. I mean, VFC that's implement the NFV Orchestrator based on IDC specification inside the ONAP project. How that project should go? Maybe you can have some suggestion for that.
My suggestion for that, again, I'm cannot insist on the suggestion, but I think that a migration path that makes sense here is that we start with having the models, the legacy models that VFC understands. Maybe we start with wrapping them up into the new model as artifacts, okay, and then just passing them through to the VFC whenever possible, and then just step by step making VFC and SO as well, okay, just to understand the internal model and just to reduce this need into wrapping this black boxing of legacy model. That's the way I see this migration, but maybe there will be other proposals. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So this is one proposal. Great. So let's come back next week again, and so we have to keep discussion in the wiki page for recent 2 or 3 weeks to have the everything being discussed. So we can come back to finalize how we should move forward for this part. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So this is all for today, Carl. Is there any other urgent issue we need to discuss by this time? Okay, thank you. If not, so I think Yang Xuan and Antonio has to follow up. And Victor, please send the email to them as early as possible. So thank you, everybody. Have a good day, and bye-bye.
Goodbye.